It's the Steve Fast Show on WJABC, and joining us from Philadelphia, where Pope Francis has been involved in a number of events, is ABC newsman Dan Harris, the co-anchor of Nightline, Good Morning America weekend anchor. Dan, thanks for taking some time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
What are your impressions? You're there covering Francis. For a long time, you were one of the chief religion correspondents for ABC. What's your take on this visit to America?
I mean, I think it's obvious that he's got an enormous appeal here. The crowds have been just adoring. One of the things that's interesting for me to watch is that I don't think he's changing church doctrine on a lot of issues that are super sensitive. I just think he's speaking in a way and presenting himself in a way that is very attractive to people, especially the word you hear over and over again is humility.
You covered the conclave when he was elected. Was there, I don't know, any kind of buzz of anticipation that there needed to be a transformative figure within the Catholic Church at that time?
It's hard to know what the cardinals were thinking in the conclave because it's a bit of an opaque process. But, you know, I think it's clear that given the reception he's had around the world, that the church was ready for a shift. You're going to hear some background noise here because I'm walking into the streets of Philadelphia. There's a lot of loud music. Hopefully it won't be too distracting. But, you know, the mood here is really like a festival. And, you know, I covered it when the last Pope, Benedict, came to America, and he also got a warm reception. But it's just impossible to compare the sort of intensity of the affection that we're seeing on this trip.
You mentioned that you covered the religious beat and that you covered Benedict when he was here. You, as we said, were there for the conclave when Francis was elected. And when we talked to you before, Dan, we talked about how you had this journey from the panic attack that you had on air on Good Morning America in 2004 to finding your way into the practice of meditation. And one of the things that's interesting about that is that your assignment in covering the beat of religion kind of led you to the path that you're on now. How did that happen? I guess Peter Jennings assigned you to that beat?
That's absolutely right, that the beat led me to what to this new sort of mission that I'm on. And yeah, I was assigned by Peter Jennings, who was my mentor at the time, to cover faith and spirituality, which I didn't want to do because I was raised in the People's Republic of Massachusetts by a pair of intensely secular scientists. And it turned out to be a great thing. You know, first of all, I learned a lot about the world of faith and spirituality, about which I was, you know, incredibly ignorant. And then eventually I kind of stumbled into, from a journalistic standpoint, covering the world of self-help. And that ultimately led me, by the way, I wasn't a big fan of self-help. I thought there was a lot of malarkey being peddled there, but it did ultimately lead me to learning about the science that says meditation is really good for you. And I had always assumed that meditation was only for weirdos, rogue gurus, et cetera, et cetera. But it turns out, you know, it can lower your blood pressure, boost your immune system, and rewire key parts of your brain. And that's why I started doing it.
Well, you talk about the science involved with the practice of meditation, and a lot of neuroscientists in the last 10 years have really been studying the brain and are able to see things happening physiologically in the brain under different conditions. And it seems unlikely, but you're involved. You've partnered with Joseph Goldstein, who is this Buddhist scholar and a tech startup, and you're involved in this app. What about technology and science is informing how this app works, and can you explain what it is?
Sure. So to back up a second, I ended up writing a book about my experiences called 10% Happier, and it's about how a fidgety, skeptical newsman became a daily practitioner of meditation. And the title itself is a bit of a joke. It's kind of counter-programming against what I find to be the over-promising in the self-help world. And, you know, if you had told me just a couple of years ago that I was ever going to end up being a public evangelical for meditation, I would have coughed my beer up through my nose, but here I am. And after the book came out, I was approached by a startup company out of Boston to do an app that teaches people how to meditate. I am not, however, a qualified meditation teacher, so we brought in my meditation teacher, a guy named Joseph Goldstein, and we created a two-week course called 10% Happier. You can get it in the Apple App Store, or you can get it at, if you don't have an Apple phone, you can get it on 10percenthappier.com. And it's a two-week course. It'll cost you a few bucks, but you can get started for free if you want to just check it out. And it's short, daily doses of meditation designed for skeptics. And that's the deal. And, you know, we talk a lot about the science because science is something that is very attractive to people who otherwise might reflexively reject this.
Well, it's kind of strange to think of something as distracting as a smartphone can actually be a tool for mindfulness.
I love it. I love it. Because it's like the ultimate judo move. These devices are, you know, completely destroying our ability to focus. But you can harness them to boost your ability to focus. It's entirely possible. And we're certainly not the first mover in this space. There's another company called Headspace, which has been around for a while. They're great. They also have an app. But we're coming in and trying to do it from a little bit of a different angle. We're a little bit more designed for the skeptic. And also, we have this one feature that's unique, which is that at any time you can text or email a coach who is assigned to you, who's a real human being, who can answer your questions at any time. And that's a big deal because, you know, as soon as you start doing this practice, you will have questions.
You know, when you've talked about the fact that you have become a spokesperson, in a way, for meditation and mindfulness, and that you came to that from a skeptical mindset, you mentioned the skepticism, you now identify yourself as Buddhist. And I wonder I wonder if that has affected how people perceive you as a person, but also as a news person, because we don't necessarily think of... We think of anchors as cynical, you know, of taking a cynical eye, of looking only thing for the facts. So anytime you get anywhere in the realm that overlaps at all with spirituality, do you find that people immediately raise an eyebrow?
I haven't found it yet, but, you know, here's my rap on the whole Buddhist thing. First of all, let me just say something about cynicism versus skepticism. I think there's a big difference between the two. I think there's nothing wrong with being skeptical, but cynicism has sort of a negative connotation where you're only looking for the negative. You're not even open to the positive, as opposed to just asking hard questions from a position of, you know, sort of good faith. But I don't mean faith in the traditional sense there. In terms of Buddhism, it means more and less than you might think. Less because it's not a religion in the way most people practice religion. Buddhism can be practiced as a religion, there's no question about it, but the Buddha himself said very clearly, I'm going to make a few metaphysical claims, you can take them or leave them. And there's no story about the origins of the universe or anything like that. And so you can practice Buddhism if you are a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or, like me, a respectful agnostic. It's just a set of tools for being more sane. And my favorite quote about this is that it's not something to believe in, it's something to do. I view it as exercise for your brain. So to me, saying I'm a Buddhist is, you know, this is a rough comparison, but not entirely different from saying I'm a guy who worked out.
Is there something, though, different about Buddhism and the practice of a secular mindfulness for you?
There is. But it can become sort of a semantic difference, because the fact is that secular meditation is derived from Buddhism. And I think the advent of secular meditation is a fantastic thing, because there are a lot of people who are just uncomfortable with being associated with Eastern spirituality, no matter what. So I think the fact that it's been secularized, that a kind of meditation has come around that strips all the Buddhist language out of it, no metaphysics, has been extraordinarily helpful to tens of millions of people, perhaps. There are some critics of that who worry that once you strip out the Buddhist ethics, that somehow the practice can become craven or hollow. I have some sympathy with that argument. It's just at the end of the day, for me, more mindfulness is better than less mindfulness. If you're teaching people how, and this is what meditation does, it teaches you how to be less emotionally reactive, more focused, more calm, you know, if stripping the Buddhism out of that makes it more attractive to people, imagine the impact on parenting on our society, road rage, politics, journalism. If people were more emotionally intelligent and more focused and kinder, I just think there's no way that's a bad thing.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you taking some time from the road to talk to us about this today. And it's very interesting to me to see, you know, this entire path, because really, I mean, we're coming up on maybe 10 years now since you started exploring this.
Yeah, I mean, I started exploring faith and spirituality more than a decade ago. I've been meditating for 6 years now, and it's made a huge difference in my life. You know, that being said, I call my book 10% Happier for a reason. It doesn't solve all of your problems. It's not going to make you taller or regrow your hair or anything like that. But I've also come to believe that the 10%, to put it in financial terms, compounds annually. That over time, I just find myself increasingly happy in the face of circumstances that are beyond my control, as is the case for all of us. We live in a world that's characterized by impermanence and entropy, and meditation is a great tool for building your resiliency and helping you to be happy when things are good and less miserable when things are bad, and to recognize that you can take affirmative action in the world and try to change your circumstances, but it only goes so far.
Dan Harris, the app is the same title as his book. It's called 10% Happier. Thanks for being with us today, Dan.
It's an absolute pleasure. Great questions. Thank you very much for having me on.
Fantastic. We need to take a break. Back right after this.